Hello and welcome to the Darling and Darling podcast. I'm Simi, with me is Tim, and today we are not alone.
Yes, that's right. We have our first guest with us here, a good friend of ours. Her name is Kat. And Kat, you can say hello to our audience.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And we haven't exactly decided for a specific topic yet. But we have a few areas that we might go into, might not go into. And I want to start with a question for Kat, because one area that we are all interested in is creativity. And I would like to start with the question, Kat, what are creative projects that you have engaged in recently?
Oh, I'm studying industrial design, so it's a lot about creative works, about projects, developing new stuff. And so it's a lot to do with thinking in new devices and new ways to find creative solutions. Yeah, so a lot about finding new ideas, modeling.
Yeah, I mean, we know enough about each other that Simi and I know that you had a lot to do with university recently. So I honestly didn't expect you to be engaged in writing projects or drawing projects or anything like that. It was quite expected that most of the things you have on your mind is from university. And I mean, university is also a lot about being creative. Right now for me, I'm studying computer science, so that's not so much creativity, at least not the subjects I'm having right now. But I know that from the subject I was studying before that, with engineering psychology, that was also a lot about finding the right solution to problems and combining different methods, for example, and that also required a lot of creativity. And I would like to switch to Simi's perspective about that, because you're also studying something that requires a lot of creativity. So would you like to talk about your recent experiences with that?
Yes, I mean, we talked about it before, but I'm studying media design. And as with Kat's studies, it's when you study something that has to do with like designing, then you have to be creative most of the times. And I find myself running out of creativity from time to time, because there's only so many ways you can design something before you just have to find something new entirely. And thus, I right now have more of the experience of running out of my creativity and having troubles with actually coming up with new ideas and making another design with the same stuff that has to be in there. And yeah, sometimes it can be a struggle, a real big struggle.
I could imagine that it's sometimes quite difficult to find the right balance between what you have to do for a certain assignment for university and how you would like to do it. On the one hand, it can be that maybe it's a bit too broad and it's like you run out of imagination. You would like to have a bit more detail about how to do it. And other times, as you just said, Simi, it can also be that it's a bit too narrow and you would like to pour in more creativity, but you have to stick to the guidelines in order to make it work. So how do you experience that with university? Is it more helpful that it channels your creativity, or is it sometimes also a bit in the way because you have those guidelines and you have to stick to them, and sometimes you would desire more freedom to follow your creativity? Either one of you can start with answering that question.
Okay, I'm not Simi, but I can answer it first. So I would say in my university, at least, it's really good that we get a lot of guidance and we can follow our own path and express ourselves. So there is not a strict rule we should do it exactly that way. It's mostly that we got a task and we have to find a product, for example, in my course, my class, about kitchenery and cooking. And then we had total freedom of what we want to do. And yeah, we just discussed with our friends and with our professors about this topic and how we want to find this product and find ideas. And yeah, it's really nice to get this guidance and to learn, and the tips and things they say are always helpful. So I learned a lot, and I believe that this kind of creative process is something you can learn. So it's not completely, so it's not always hard to get into it. So yeah, it comes with time and it's trainable.
You've mentioned that example with kitchenery items that you have as a guideline there for that subject. And I imagine that you, like, that your teachers need that specific area in order to make it comparable, because they later have to give you grades for that. So yeah, as I said, they have to make it comparable in some way. And I could imagine that just with that guideline, it's still broad enough that you could find something. Like, maybe you really enjoy cooking and then it's probably quite easy for you to decide for something. But maybe if you don't like cooking, you're still into technology, and then you find an advanced item that is interesting to you or something like that. And what interests me in that area is, how was that for you? Was it easy for you to choose an item? And was there anyone in your course that had difficulties with that and who would have wished for a broader area to choose from?
I think that the topic was broad enough and everyone could pick something that they like or they're interested in. But there were some students, I think one or two, who had difficulties because they followed one idea that narrowed them down into an area they don't like. So I think it's really, really important that you have a project you really care and like, that you can do the best you can. So that's really important. Yeah. But I don't think that the topic was too narrow. Yeah.
Simi, how is your experience with that in university? Are the topics broad enough or narrow enough respectively? Or is it sometimes too much of one of those extremes?
I think, I mean, we have every freedom or some, like, we have the guidance that we have to have certain aspects in our stuff we do in our projects, but still we have a lot of freedom to choose on our own how we want to approach it. And I think that's really cool, because then you actually have the chance to diversify and do it like you want. But I think, or the thing that I struggle with even more, is that there's a certain expectation for perfectionism in there. And with that, everything has to be perfect in a certain way. And when it's not, then you have to do it again. And I think that's the thing I'm struggling more. It's not that I think it's too broad or too narrow. It's just that it's a lot and you have to, like for a certain project, you have to do 20 different types of one thing. And at some point after the 13th or 14th or 15th, your ideas will run out and then you are struggling to find something, or you have to, I think it's the thing around that I struggle with right now, or you have to explain how you came to the conclusion, but you have to explain it through other drawings and sketches, and then you have to have a certain amount of sketches to explain it to them. And sometimes it's the trouble to filling all of those sketches to explain how I came up with my idea, because sometimes I have an idea and I'm like, okay, that's the perfect one. I want to use that one. But then I have to do, I don't know how many sketches to explain how I came to the idea, but it just came, you know? So it's just there. But I think that's what I'm struggling more with, or with more, is that it has to follow a certain guideline to get from point A to point B. And sometimes I found myself working a little bit different. And then it's the difficulty to fill in the gaps in between with like other creative ideas and stuff to actually get to where I need to be in the end. But I think it's not the fault of the topics or the assignments being too broad or too narrow. It's just that everybody approaches it differently. And I think that's the thing with university and school, that you have it like in a certain way and it works for a certain kind of people, but it doesn't work for all of the people. And everybody who doesn't fall into that group, well, they will work around it a little bit and have to find their own ways there. So I think that's more of what is happening right now, at least for me.
Yeah, I've made a similar experience. I think that was back in school when we had to write something for an exam, and there we also had to submit the outline or something, I believe. And back then in my friend group, we realized, I don't know if that was actually true or if we just believed so, but we realized that it's easier to just write that assignment and then later basically to re-engineer an outline and to submit it with it, but not to start with the outline and then turn the outline into the actual essay. So we realized it makes more sense to do it the other way around and then basically to pretend that we did it in the order that it was meant to be. And I think, just as you said, sometimes it's difficult to create an assignment that actually reflects a creative process, because creative processes are so individual in a sense that, as you said, every person has a different creative process, but also every creative process is in some sense individual, because sometimes an idea evolves pretty naturally and pretty fast and quickly, and other times we have to really fight with that idea and spend a lot of time making that workable, and then it's different from time to time. Something else you mentioned there with the 20 different ideas that you have to create, and it reminded me of something that we've also talked about in one of our first episodes, which is like the valley of despair in a creative process. That oftentimes when you start gathering ideas, you come up with a few ideas quite quickly, and then the ideas you have die down and you really have to think, And then after some time, more ideas start to come up. And usually those later ideas are then also the really new ones, the innovations that you come up with. And it's in a creative process, it's important to dump those easy first ideas to get to the really creative insights that you might generate later. And is there any experience you've made how the assignments you have in university actually improve how you can be creative or how you go about creative projects?
I actually think that, at least for me, my studies actually help with generating new ideas or being more efficient in generating new ideas, because it's just something that you always have to do. Like in every beginning of every project, you start with like brain dumps and ideas. And in between, when you run out of ideas or figure out something is not really working the way it should, then you just go about finding new ideas. And I think that it makes it a lot easier because you, at some point, as Kat already said, you train your creativity. And I mean, it's just like a muscle you train when you go into the gym or something like that. And then it gets better and easier over time. But sometimes the valley of despair is hitting hard and is hitting for a longer time. But then you just have to fresh it up, or you just have to work on something else, and then it gets running again at some point. So I think that it helps with being more efficient in generating ideas and being creative in that.
I think that's true, what you're saying, from my experience. What I learned this semester is mostly that criticism and feedback from my professors is really important, and that I shouldn't take it personally, so that I can improve. And most of the time they are right, what they are saying, so it's anyways good to listen to them. But it's hard to not take it personally, because design and creative work is always really personal and comes from inside. So that's the biggest learning I had to make. And it's really, really helpful that I started writing before, and that other people have read my writing and I shared it. So that writing helped me in the process of accepting feedback and don't take it personally. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point that you are sharing there, because I'm imagining that from the standpoint of an author, because as at least the two of you know, I've published my first small book last year in summer, and we all of us are more or less working on our different projects there, and we want to publish fiction at some point. And I could imagine that it's really difficult when someone is criticizing a book of, for example, that it's really difficult to differentiate between what critic is for the book I wrote and what critic is about myself. And to differentiate that when someone is criticizing your work, then you can still learn from that and incorporate that into another project, but you don't have to take it personally. So I think it's really interesting that you're sharing that point with us. I've also made the experience in my first studies with engineering psychology, I made the experience that it's also really important to just try out being creative, because what I learned, for example, is that I learned with what topics or with what methods, is it more effective for me to work alone? And when is it more effective for me to work with others? For example, with the brainstorming, is it better when I do it alone, or is it better when I take someone with me? Or who are the people I can do that really well with? And what phases should I share with different people? Things like that. And there it was really important for me to not only have the theoretical background to know the different methods, but also the experience to know what methods work for me and how can I incorporate them the easiest in my way of creating something, in my way of coming up with ideas, something like that.
Yeah, I think, and it's really interesting because, yes, feedback is ultimately really important because it helps us getting better in the things we are doing. And I think it's also important to learn to get feedback and to take feedback. And yes, I have to agree with you guys on that one. That is, it's a good thing to have creative, or when you are doing something creative, that you get feedback and that you ask people around you what they think of your work, and also to ask them, hey, if you have feedback for me, how I could do it better, then just tell me and come back to me. And, you know, you can also talk with them, and most of them don't mean it rudely. Like, they don't give you feedback to be personally insulting to you. But sometimes, I know that sometimes the way they give feedback can be really daunting and really, like, it can feel really harsh and it can feel really insulting, even though they don't necessarily want that. And I think it's just an important part of being a creative person to learn that at some point, that they just want you to get better. They don't want you to crawl under a rock and never come out again because you're too either embarrassed or hurt to keep going, but to actually utilize what they are saying and get better with the things you do. So I think feedback is a really big part in that and a really important part in that.
I think you just added one element to our conversation here, and that was the actively seeking out feedback. Because I think what Kat was mainly referring to is the feedback that you automatically get in university, that your teachers just look at your things and they have to give you a grade, and that's in itself a feedback. And most teachers also tell you how they came up with that grade, and then you get more amplified feedback. But especially with personal projects, it's really important to seek out actively that kind of feedback. And maybe in university also in advance to ask other people, because if you want to get the best grade there is, then it's not enough to wait for that grade to give you the feedback that you would have needed to get a better grade. I think you understand what I mean. And I think it's also something that we have experienced with that podcast, that we thought in the beginning we would just tell our friends and our family members, hey, we have a feedback. No, we have a podcast now, and listen to that and give us feedback to that. And I think only one or two people actually came back to us and gave us that feedback. So it's not that easy to actively seek out feedback and also to address the people who can give you the right insights into it. So I would like to talk about that, about different strategies, how to seek out that feedback that actually helps you to improve the things you're doing. Simi, do you have any advice for that, or any experiences with that, how to seek out the feedback?
I think the first thing that is really important is that you make yourself ready for that feedback, that you don't go out and say, oh, I need feedback for that and that. And then you get like really defensive when you actually get feedback. Because I think the first thing that is really important there is to understand that it's not against you and that you ask for the feedback to get better. And if they tell you, for example, with a book project or something like that, that something needs to be cut or something needs to be put differently, then it's not like your job then is to listen and to make notes and not to get butthurt about it, if you know what I mean. I mean, if they delivered really rudely, then that's a whole other thing in of itself. But if you ask for the feedback, then you also have to be ready for that feedback. And it can also be that you ask for feedback, then you get feedback, and then you realize you were not yet ready for that feedback. But I think it's important to call it back into your mind as often as you can, that if you ask for it, it's not to hurt you, but it's to actually pull out the best potential out of your work. And thus I would start with that point.
I think, or how I would put it, what you just said, is that you should be mindful about your mindset, because I've also made that experience that I go out to other people and seek feedback from them. And I tell myself that I want to improve that thing and I want to get better, and I want them to tell everything that is, or I want them to tell me about everything that they don't like so that I can make it better. And I tell myself that I'm really up to that constructive feedback, and then they get back to me and tell me about all the things that they don't like, and then I realize that I get sad or disappointed about it. And maybe it was because I told myself I wanted that quote-unquote negative but constructive feedback, but what I actually wanted was just that approval and that they told me that how amazing it was. So I think it's important to be mindful about that. Why are you actually asking for that, and what are you expecting, and what do you want to hear?
I think it's also important to keep in mind what time it is you are reaching out for feedback or you giving feedback. So it's different if you are in the beginning of a creative process or if you're really late, so you have basically finished your project and just want to have 1 week left to finish it and the exam is there. So it's important, because later on you can't change really much. So that's more about comforting yourself or others. So that's really important. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm coming here again from that engineering psychology perspective. But in a design process, there's something similar that you make usability testing. And there's also the kind of test that you do in the beginning, where you actually try to find those elements that you need to change. And in the end, you just try to get an overview. How good is it after all? And I think it's similar here. So it's really interesting that you're pointing that out. And I think it's for both important. On the one hand, the person who asks for feedback, but also the person who gives feedback, that maybe you should be a bit kinder when it's to the end of the project. And if you have big elements that you don't like about it, or that the other person should technically change, then maybe you shouldn't say that directly. Maybe you can incorporate something like, oh, here are the few details, and how do you think about for the next project reaching out earlier, because maybe we can make different changes when it's early in the project or something like that, but not pointing out directly that there are big flaws in it. Because, yeah, as you said, it can be. It's also really difficult to get feedback like that, but you can't. You can do nothing about it no more. So I think it's for both sides really important to keep that in mind. Kat, do you have a system like that in your university, also with your fellow students, that you exchange ideas and give feedback to each other?
Yeah, we basically most of the time work in groups and we always talk about our progress in our projects. So it's always about feedback. Every week we come together and talk about what we present, our progress, what we made, and then we get feedback and give feedback. And also the professors are there, so they also give every week feedback, and we try to advance. So it's not, as you said in the beginning, that it's only a grade and then you get feedback. So we work really close together. So that's a really important part of the creative process to advance, that you get feedback every week and regularly, that it gets better. So yeah, to improve. Do you have the same thing?
I have the I can write to my fellow students because everything for me, everything is online, but I can meet up with them over Teams and we can talk to each other. And we also did that. We also have a WhatsApp group where we can just write each other and ask for feedback from each other. And we also have something that's called learning sprints, where we just come together with our tutors and then we just talk to them and they look at our stuff and give feedback. So there we also have the possibility to look for feedback and to get feedback. But with me, it's like, or with how I'm doing it or with how my studies work, you have to do it on your own. You have to actually seek out feedback. It's not normally that you have to be in attendance at those learning sprints, and you don't have to be in attendance on Teams to actually talk to the people there, but you can seek out other people to get that feedback, and you can just write to them whenever you want to. And it's really cool because you can also just talk to your tutors and just ask them and write them, and then they also give great feedback. And here, I mean, they also help you to get better. So we also have that, but you have to seek it out and you have to actually go that step to tell them, I want feedback from you. It's not normally just that you come together because you now have that course or something. So yes, for me, it's a bit different there.
There's something that I want to explore in what you just said. And it's, I think normally what people tell us is that when we are seeking out feedback, we should look at people close to us, because that's less likely that it gets too personal or too insulting because we understand each other. And I think people close to us also have the advantage that they can personalize the feedback because they know how we work, they know what we want to achieve, things like that, so they can address our needs. And what you just said is that it works for you quite the opposite, that it's really anonymously how you give feedback and also how you ask for feedback. So how do you feel about that, this stretch between personal feedback with close relationships, but also that anonymous feedback just in WhatsApp group from people who probably don't even really know who you are?
I think it's really interesting because I figured out that it works both ways, like that it works perfectly fine when you just put everything into a WhatsApp group and be like, okay, look at this stuff. Is it good? Is it bad? Just tell me and tell me what I need to change about it to make it work. But I personally like the personal more because I'm just a personal person. So for me, it's a lot easier to just ask people around me, hey, look at that. Does it look good? Does it not look good? And to not do it that much virtually. Because sometimes I'm also a really introverted person and I don't like to go out there. So that's another thing I should work on. But yeah, I also think that for not university stuff, it's also a lot easier to go about it in a personal way because then, you know, you get a lot of insight and you also get a lot of insight into yourself and how the other person views you. And it's really interesting to also learn more about one another in the process of giving feedback to one another, if you get what I mean. And you don't have that with strangers. But with strangers, you have the advantage that you probably will never see them and they don't know who you are. They don't know what you do. They just see your work and then they can be really objective because they also don't have to be afraid to hurt you because you will never see each other. So sometimes I feel like with a stranger, the feedback in certain aspects can be more objective than when you know that person and you know that's an insecurity of them and then you phrase it differently and like it gets really subjective really fast. So I think it's a really interesting dynamic. What do you search for? Do you search for individual and personal feedback or do you just want to know is it good or is it bad? And what can you do better to make it better? Or do you really want a detailed breakdown of your work in the specific instance of, I don't know, with a personal note attached to it and be like, oh, I really like your work, but please work on that and that and that. So I think both is cool, but I personally prefer the personal one a lot more than the anonymous.
Kat, how do you feel about that?
I don't really have experience with anonymous feedback, so it's hard to compare, but I like the way we have it at my university. So we are a really small group, and even the whole university is just 700 students, and they are all into design. So even if you walk around and talk about your projects and your ideas with people from higher semesters, you can get more anonymous feedback, but you also know them a bit. So, but I like that there is always this culture at the university that you can ask everyone and talk about your ideas, your projects, and in your semester, in your class, your friends and your tutors or professors, that they give you feedback, and the more personal vibe gives it a bit more importance to people to actually take the time and get into it and give really good feedback, is my experience. Yeah. So I like it the way it is.
Yeah, I think also from the feedback culture that you've actually kicked off that topic in the beginning. The way you phrased it, I think that having a good feedback culture, and when we are thinking about the perfect feedback culture, then we would have the advantages of anonymous feedback also in closer relationships. Because what we're talking about is that the other person when you're doing it anonymously, the other person is not afraid of hurting you, and you are not so likely to take that personally or something like that. And I think if you incorporate a really good feedback culture, then you also have those advantages. So maybe it's something that your university does really well, because you don't have that anonymous opportunities. But since you are learning early on about healthy feedback cultures, maybe you can still get those advantages. Something else that I would like to ask you about is, because for me, for example, it's when I'm thinking about projects in computer science, then it's not really possible to get feedback from someone who is not into computer science. So if I want to get feedback, I have to ask someone who is in computer science, because I can't just go to someone and show them a bunch of code and ask them, is that beautiful or is it not? Because it doesn't matter if it is. But for you, it's something different, because what you are designing should look nice to the untrained eye. So what I would like to know is, or what I'm interested in is it better for you, or is it more helpful to you to ask people with no background knowledge in design and just ask them, does that look beautiful? Does it look nice? What is bothering you about that? Or is it more helpful to ask other designers and get their insights into that?
So if we talk about how things look and about more graphic design way, it's more helpful to ask also fellow designers how to improve and what's right, because there are some rules of design and how things are aesthetic. So that's something you can learn, and they have more the eye to see what's good and what's bad. So I wouldn't try to ask non-designers about these issues. But if we have some products, for example, we are developing in projects, then we ask future customers how they would use it and if it's a good design or not. So like usability studies and stuff like that. So it really depends what you want to achieve when you ask someone else.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that you're mentioning usability studies there, because that's definitely something where our studies intersect. And like, especially my experience, but it's more like my theoretical knowledge, but of course also backed up with some experiences. And what I've learned is that when you ask, in your case, fellow designers, then they can give you quite detailed feedback. They don't only tell you, well, that doesn't look so nice, but they tell you if you align it a bit better, or if you change the color scheme in that direction, then you will improve it. But I think we are running the risk there that they, like, maybe you have that one case where you go against the rule, but it makes it better. And yep. In a designer's eye, they might be so focused on that rule that they can't see that it's better in that case and it looks better to do it differently. I think that's the risk you're running there. But it's, as I said, it's easier to get that, I call it qualified feedback, that they tell you how to change it and what you need to do. And I also know that from the usability studies that you've mentioned, that with professional designers, it's quite easy to run a study like that, because designers can tell you what to change and how to do it. And with future customers, you have to translate that. You have to translate what are they saying into what do I actually have to change. So I think it's a bit more complicated. But with future customers, they don't pay attention to those rules I've mentioned. They just see the product as it is. So I think it's a better bet. If you have to get the best feedback, it's better to ask those future clients. How do you do that in university with your projects? Do you also have those quote unquote future clients that you ask questions? So do you also get feedback from people who aren't into design themselves?
In the early steps of developing our projects, we have this time of research where we ask different people about what we want to improve and how to develop our project. So that's the first step when we can ask someone else. And then later on, if we develop prototyping and then we try to find customers, so future customers, where we can test our project. Yeah. But you said something before that's really interesting about breaking the rules. And I believe it's really important to firstly know the rules, that you can learn when to break it, because it's harder to break the rules right, that it still looks amazing or even better. But if you want to learn and become a designer, it's really important to first know the rules, that you can break it someday. Yeah, so you have a good foundation.
You learn about a rule and then you say to yourself, well, I know that better. And then you try to do it differently right away and it just doesn't work out. So I'm completely on your side there. You first have to understand that rule and you first have to work with that rule. And once you've completely understood it, then you can start breaking it and then it makes sense. But at first you should stick to that, yes.
Before I started doing media design, I was doing some semesters with like English. I was studying British and American English and literature. And we had one professor there. And it was really funny because he was from England and he broke every grammatical rule there is in English because he just made up stuff. And then we asked him, well, why can't we just do it? Because we can also just say it's our style now. And he was like, if you don't understand the basics of a language, you just make mistakes. That's what you do then. It's just making mistakes. But if you know the basics and you know the rules of the language, then you can break them. And if you break them, then you develop your own style. But in order to make that, you have to learn how it actually works and how it actually goes. Because then also you can explain why you're breaking the rule or what you're breaking exactly. And then it's not just a mistake. Then it's your own style. And we were like, okay, we can also do our own style, and some try it. And they were just making horrendous mistakes. That's what I learned to that. In order to break rules and make it cool, you have to know how it actually works.
And my professor said that we should always explain our decisions why we design things like they are. And that's really important to understand why we decide to make this or that another decision. And even if you break the rules, you have to explain why you choose this way. And if it's good, the professor says, yeah, fine, go with it. But it's important to understand the reasonings behind your decision and why you think it looks better than the rules, or why you, for example, in our typography course, we make posters, and on the posters, we don't align some things perfectly on the visual lines. For example, because how it feels. So the poster feels differently when it's perfect and when it's slightly upset. So sometimes it's not the same way. Maybe Simi knows what I'm
I know what you mean, because it, when you look at it, it looks different and it evokes different feelings in you, and it evokes a different kind of you seeing the way the poster looks at you, and with that you can play to convey something differently or to convey a different picture or convey a different feeling when you want to transport it through your poster. So yeah, I understand what you mean. You can sometimes play around with that to just do it a little bit more on the nose, I would say, or to evoke something different in the reader, even though most of the times they will not really catch why it's different, but they know something about this right now is different. And sometimes that's what you want. You just want to do it differently and evoke something different with it.
Yes, sometimes the mathematically correct position isn't the best. So if you slightly offset it in one direction, it visually feels right, but isn't mathematically. So that's also a point.
I think that's also a really interesting difference between my field of studies and yours, because for me, one example that came to mind for me was like designing algorithms in coding. And something really important in computer science is to make those algorithms efficient, because you want the computer to take the least time possible to finish a task. And there is a clear right and wrong and a clear best version for something like that, because the less steps it takes, the better it is. But for design, when working with humans, it's something completely different, because you want to evoke those emotions. And sometimes if you have a slight imperfection, that's exactly what you need to generate those feelings. And I think that's a really interesting difference there, that there is no clear right or wrong to it. But sometimes if you want to achieve something, then you have to make changes accordingly to evoke those feelings and to create these emotions that you want a person to feel when they are looking at your product or at your poster. Simi, how do you do that with your projects? Do you feel like it's more helpful to you when you're getting feedback from other designers who know their rules and their things? Or do you find it more helpful to get feedback from normal people who don't know much about design, but who can tell you that looks nice, that doesn't look that nice? Which one is more helpful to you? Or does it depend on the situation you're in?
I think it depends on the situation, because I like to do both a little bit, because from designers you get, like, they also explain what you can do differently to change it, and they understand the workings behind it. But I feel like if you want to figure out if something is actually working or not, it is really good to just test it with somebody who doesn't do design, because then you can just show them the poster or the postcard or whatever you're working on, and then you can just show them and be like, how does this look to you? What do you feel? Just explain to me when you look at it, what do you see? What do you understand from it? And most of the times you get all the answers you need already, because if they don't understand what you want to convey, well, then you have to work on it again. But if an untrained eye already understands what you want to do and where you want to get at, then you are at least on a good track to where you need to be. And then you can ask designers and ask for their feedback and be like, okay, I feel like something is off there. Am I right? Am I not right? I did that and that and that to come up with that idea. I have right now. And can you explain to me if that's good, if that's not good? What could I change? Do you have any ideas what I could change? And I think with them you can go more into detail because they understand this thought processes and they also understand the basics of design to help you figuring out where problems may lie and what you can change about them in a technical standpoint. But I think with not designers and untrained eyes, you just get a more raw response because they don't automatically go into the designing aspect of what you show them. They are just like, well, something looks off here. Or I have no idea what you want to tell me there. So explain it. And there you get a really good response whether or not what you're doing is actually working. Or if you just have to work on it again and show them again and be like, what do you see? And then the other person's like, oh, now I see something, you know? I think it's really specific for what you want and what you need. But I think it's never wrong to ask both parties, designers and not designers, to just give you a little bit of feedback, because from both you will get something valuable, but not both can give you the specifics. But also not both can you give you the just look at it and find the first reaction to it. Because when you tell somebody, I designed something, and that person is a designer, they will be like, okay, the typography looks like that, and that's that, and oh, it has that and that angle. And, you know, they look in it in a really different lens than somebody who has never heard of all of those concepts. So, yeah, I think both is good, but you have to figure out what you need and what you want.
Yeah, I feel like as a designer, you sometimes focus so much on the details that you forget to look at the whole picture. And for the untrained eye, it's just natural to see the overall picture. And then they can tell you, yeah, it's good, or maybe something is off. But then you need those designers to give you the specific feedback. That detail is off, because the untrained eye can just tell you, or usually that's the case, they just tell you something doesn't fit, but they can't pinpoint it. Something else that I go back to usability testing here, because something I learned there is that it's sometimes difficult to work with those untrained people when you're dealing with abstract or early prototypes. Because in usability designing, you have something called wireframes, especially for two-dimensional interfaces for websites, for example, or for displays, and you replace pictures, for example, with placeholders, and also most of the text is not there yet, and then it can be really difficult to show that to an untrained person and to ask them for feedback, because for them, they might just think, well, that looks boring. There needs to be color in it, but it's difficult for them to imagine how would it look like with color, and to just focus on the broad scheme of it, and to focus on the details that are there yet, and not to focus on the missing details. And there it's sometimes much easier to work with fellow designers, because they understand, it's like you speak the same language. Or to get back to the analogy of language that Zimi has used earlier, imagine you want to make a cool poem or something, and then you go to someone and tell them, yeah, now imagine we put that phrase in, but we do it like object, verb, subject, adjective, pronoun. And then the untrained eye is like, I can't imagine what you're talking about. But once you have that quote-unquote prototype finished, and you show them the real sentence, and then the sentence is like, me make sentence change, then they understand what you want to say. And then they can give you feedback to that. While someone who is really into language and who knows what you're talking about can also give you feedback on your abstract prototype with those weird phrases in it and those weird words or those weird graphics to go back to design there. Have you any experience with that and with testing early prototypes where it's sometimes difficult for people to understand them?
We had one project, but that was before design. So when I was studying product engineering, so it's a few years ago, I think too. And we were at a company. They were developing stuff for planes and rockets, so engines. And we tried to fix their working papers and manuals for their machines. And we tried to advance their manuals. And it was a bit hard because we also tried to present them a more advanced solution for the future. So in 10 years, what they just should try to achieve. And we couldn't build really a good prototype for that. So it was really hard to test it. So that's my only experience with early prototype usability testing.
Simi, judging from your projects that you've done for university, I think you don't really have those abstract prototypes, do you?
No, I haven't had that yet. So I will. We will keep Kat's experience and your experience there, because for me, I just have cool sketches and then later finished thingies. So I don't have prototypes and stuff like that yet. So
yeah, maybe you will get to a point in your studies where you think back to that because you're doing something similar. Is there anything else that you or either one of you would like to add to that topic? I mean, we dived quite deep into that whole feedback thing. Or is there maybe another area that you would like to talk about?
For me, I don't have to add anything to feedback anymore. Kat, how is it for you?
No. I could add that sometimes it's really nice to give feedback or to just express yourself to a cat because they can't give you feedback back. And that's nice. If you want feedback without harm, is a cat a good solution?
Yeah, I think it's a cool idea because what I think is sometimes it's just really cool to present what you have because it makes you look at it in another angle. And then sometimes you realize something that you didn't realize when you were looking on it from the creator perspective. But when you look at it from a customer and consumer perspective, then you realize that, yeah, you just have a different perspective and maybe you realize something that is not working yet. Or maybe you also, it also helps you to realize what are the things that work really well with that. And you can utilize that you just present it to your animal or to your stuffed animal or to a toy or in front of the mirror or anything like that. I think that's enough for today. I mean, we will definitely make more episodes with Kat in the future because I think we've enjoyed it, haven't we, Simi?
I enjoyed it greatly.
We have that tradition with ending our podcast episodes with a prompt. And I mean, I would definitely jump to a journaling prompt here because I love journaling, but I will give the two of you the opportunity to jump in. So if you want to take it, you can seize the opportunity to give our listeners the prompt of the week.
I don't have a prompt right away. Yeah, Tim, so come up with the prompt or we will just keep talking.
I mean, we've been talking a lot about feedback here. So what comes to my mind first is a prompt like thinking about what project I could get feedback for and from whom I could seek that. What do you think about that prompt?
I think it's really great because you can also ask for written feedback, then you can read it. You know, because some people here like to read. They really like to read. So reading a book or reading feedback can't be that different, I tell you guys. It can't be that different.
And if you like it, you can still give the podcast good feedback and listen again.
Nicely put in, Kat. Very well. I appreciate it.
When get I paid?
Like unpaid promo here. But we really appreciate it.
Okay.
So I think since we have our prompt for this episode and we have nothing more to say, I would say we say goodbye to our listeners and we will see you guys around and you will hear us around again. And then until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, until our next episode. Bye-bye.